Blog Talk Radio.
Metaphysicians for anybody using their intuition. So come join the talk and let's have fun. Cosmic Passport is number one. The Spaced Out Radio Network, we're live. The Cosmic Passport has arrived, yeah.
Welcome to Cosmic Passport. This evening, our very special guest is Paul Hamden on the Spaced Out Radio Network, and we're happy to be here on the Spaced Out Radio Network, and we're happy to have our very special guest, Paul Hamden, from Australia, who is a multi-talented, multi-dimensional, multiverse person who has been working for years with the Zetas. The Zeta aliens, and he's also a spirit medium, and he has a really firm and grounded understanding of our realities as energetic beings, our human realities as both physical and energetic and spiritual beings, and also the Zeta reticulan race and their energetic realities as physical and spiritual and energetic beings. And, you know, sometimes we're going to talk about some things tonight. We're going to get into some semantics that you may not understand. But this is pre-recorded, and if anybody has any questions, you can reach me at elizabethanglin.com or info@elizabethanglin.com. And you can reach Paul. Paul, where can people reach you if they have questions?
They can email me on paulham33@hotmail.com. And I've also got a few Facebook pages as well.
Okay. And he's very good. I've known Paul for a little over a year. We're both on the Alien Abductee Support Group, all capitals, on Facebook. And he really takes the time to explain what he's talking about and to be very thorough about what he's talking about. A Primer of the Zeta Race is the main book that we're going to talk about tonight, and you can download that for free. Just type in to your Google or other browser, download A Primer of the Zeta Race, and there will be multiple ways to download it. You also had a book that you wrote previous to that, which is a trilogy of alien interaction. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a book on the alien interaction, and it's basically it started when my journey started to fully develop, and I talk about things like meditation. I talk about contact. We have a question and answer sessions that we do. Look, let me just explain a little bit about what I do. So apart from all of the contact that I've had, you know, when I was younger, you know, we had a craft come and, you know, four of us saw the craft. You know, through the years, we've had other beings materialize in the house and a few other occasions they've actually bought a craft and materialized with about 20 people that were there. So we've actually had a lot of contact with them.
Wow.
They have no problem coming into the house and waking myself up and other people. Asking, you know, if we want to have interaction with them. Another thing that they've done is they've taught my body, my etheric body, to use what's called a mind-to-mind process, whereby they can speak through me. So quite often I'll do a public sitting where they'll come and speak through me and answer questions from the public. And at any given time, there could be 20 to 30 people there. And so a lot of this stuff has been put into the books. This is where the Alien Interaction Trilogy book came from, and also a primer of the Zeta Race. Now, with the primer book, it's co-authored by William Treneist, a retired Canadian scientist, and we give that book away for free. We feel that this information is given freely, so we give it freely. And also at the moment, we're working on the second volume of that book as well. This book, The Primer of the Zeta Race, is read by a lot of different people, and who shall remain nameless. And a lot of people contact me, and a lot of them are professional people seeking to understand where we got the information, how did we validate the information, and that type of thing.
Yes, okay, great. I actually want to back up a little bit, because I've always had questions about you. You know, you are halfway around the world. You're on the other side of the world. We're more than halfway around the world. From where I am, and you had experiences as a child. Is that something that happened with you?
Yeah, look, it's pretty typical, you know. I guess I've been reading a lot about other people's experiences, especially on the abduction groups, and you know, people somehow seem to have conscious memory of contact at around the age of five. I remember having contact at about 18 months old. But when I was five, I was certainly contacted and had a sample taken from my leg. And obviously there was a screen memory put in place in regards to that. Then over a period of a few years, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years, I had some more contact when I was, 20 years old, where they came into the house, physically came into the house. It's always been really important to me that that I'm not contacted when I'm by myself. I don't like being contacted when I'm by myself, because it can allude to psychological issues, and also there's a level of disbelief from people when you are contacted by yourself. So I've always said to them, look, is it possible to have either one person or three people with me when it happens? And so they abide by that process.
Right.
And so yeah, and as I got older, you know, we had more craft come, and where other people were present and saw the craft, and saw the Zetas inside the craft as well, and everybody was conscious. And then we've had two major contacts in the last 2 years, where the craft have come with about 20 people. So that's been pretty interesting.
Okay. Yeah, so you know, you can't tell from your voice what your age is. You know, you could be anything by your voice, from your early 20s to anything.
I'm nearly 60. I'm nearly 60.
You're 50. Nearly 60.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good several decades of contact. When in your 20s did you become proactive? What I really like about what you're saying is this idea of reciprocity. Hey, you know, I'm helping you out. You got to help me out. Come when people are here. You know, let's have people see you. When did this begin to happen, or were you just always together in this way?
No,
from a young
age? No, I don't believe I was together in any shape or form, because mixed in amongst all that was that I could see spirits quite clearly. So I'd get a lot of spirit people coming and talking to me and giving me their information. And honestly, I thought, you know, this is crazy. You know, this can't be happening. And when I was about 40, I decided to actually, face what was going on around me, and I started to interact with the spirit people, and I realized that they weren't there to in any way harm me, but to actually try and support me. So what I did to reciprocate that was I used to sit down with a pad and a pencil and listen to their life story and take their date of birth and their loved ones' names and those sorts of things, and then contact the loved ones as well. And so over a period of 2 years, we had contacted a couple of hundred different people. And that really helped me move through that whole process of seeing something that other people couldn't see. But always in the background of that contact was that extraterrestrial contact. And it was more about me coming to a place in my own life where, rather than fearing it, I really grew into a desire to want to understand it. And so I decided to face this, and went the next time they come to actually speak to them, which I did. And I said, you know, sort of laid down a few things that I wanted to see take place. I'll say this, I'm writing a new book called The Zeta Mind. And in the book, I'm talking about validation. And I said to them, look, I really appreciate that you come. I sort of understand what you do to a certain degree, but is it possible for you to come and validate yourself? Can you tell us what you could do to prove that you actually do exist, that you're not interdimensional entities, that you do live in the physical, that you come from somewhere? Can you tell us? And so they gave us three things that they could do. And one of them was that in a sitting that they would use what's called independent direct voice. Now, normally this is what spirit people use to communicate apart from a medium using a substance either called ectoplasm or a photoplasm. So the extraterrestrials actually spoke for themselves in the room as a floating voice. And they did that in front of about four other people. The second thing was that they said that they would do was that they would fully materialize in the room, in light, and they did that. And in doing so, they actually walked across and put its hand on one of the people's shoulders and gave them healing. And this was, you know, yes, a commonly known grey that a lot of people hold fear about. But as they state themselves, there's many facets to their race, and not all of them are seeking to provide any level of fear at all. A lot of them are trying to undo a lot of the damage that's being done by the race, just like the human race, you know, is portrayed to a lot of other civilizations. And the third thing was that they said that they would bring a craft, and they did that in front of everybody. So, and they got out and they walked around everybody as well. So that was very interesting too.
Wow, very nice. What year was this? When did this happen?
The validation started about 8 years ago. The first two points took place about 8 years ago. But the actual craft that have come, in the last few years. We don't disclose where the craft come and all those sorts of things or else. And I don't blame people. Right. They would want to go there because I would want to go there as well. But you know, you're seeing a lot now, a lot more craft appear now, a lot more people calling in craft. They're vectoring in craft using that vectoring process. The races are much more able now to navigate through technologies that would stop them from materializing as well into the atmosphere, and so they're quite willing to show themselves on many different levels to many different people. That's not the level of disclosure that they would hope for, but at this point, that's the best that they're going to give. Apart from the healings that they do, so
I have a real sense that there was a try for the more, you know, worldwide academic disclosure, and it didn't happen. So we have what we have.
Well, there's a reason why that didn't We've actually asked them about that, and they said that the main issue was that when you try to join any two societies together, for whatever reason, there'll be many individuals within that society that reject that process. And so they're saying that disclosure, although it's, you know, certainly going to happen at some point, really needs for them to fully understand this race, the human race as it stands, and for a lot of people to understand that their consciousness needs to be removed from fear. We need to move past these situations where people fear contact with extraterrestrials. That's certainly a problem for them.
It makes it difficult to think sanely. And the other thing is, I would just say I was involved in the academic push to have disclosure, and there was a gentleman who was in, he was the head of the Journal of American Medical Association, and he was a physician, and he was a kidney specialist, but one of his main points was that if you had disclosure, that there would be such societal change and so much fear in the general public, and that regular traditional societal ways of doing things and getting things done would begin to break down. And he was afraid, he had less of an issue with the fact that it might be real than he had an issue of this would be very unhealthy for people to have all of their belief systems turned on their head. And you know, you can argue what belief system is healthy versus unhealthy, but I always think the truth is healthy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It really does have, they're right. What they said to you is right. There would be so much fear, and even fear of people being afraid, or fear of people losing their grounding or whatever gives them their center.
That is true,
that
absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and see, let me, I suppose I want to discuss just a little bit about the way that I was contacted. So once I decided to allow them to contact me consciously, rather than, say, in a sleep state or any other state, when I was doing meditation, what would take place is I would link into different levels of consciousness. And because I'd had encounters with them before in the physical, I was able to seek out what's called a signature. All beings have a signature.
Mm-hmm.
You have one, I have one, we all have one.
Okay.
And what we found was that any time that I was actually contacted by them, there was a physical ramification to that. So I would become unwell. I would be burnt on my face and my arm, and all those sorts of things, and maybe even feel like in some respects that I was physically sick. And that would diminish over a few days. It took 2 years to get past that, of sitting every week, so that it got to the point where that contact diminished, residual problems diminished. And that was another thing they were talking about, that in their contact with other races, we all hold different frequencies, and those frequencies need to in some way become aligned. They're not willing to provide, to upset anybody. And generally we find that people end up with autoimmune problems and you can name a list of them, from contact or what is perceived as abduction, through contact with races. And that's to do with the misalignment of frequencies, that they're well aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
That's actually... have they talked to you at all? One of the things that I find that I'm doing here in the United States is working with people who have as some aspect of their spiritual and energetic self an alien aspect of just their self, and their, whether you want to call that their higher self or their whole self or just their beingness. And I'm finding that autoimmune disorders are presencing with people, and they may not have any concept of, you know, the alien experience of contact or abduction or Zetas or any others. But when it seems as if their alien self or their self that across time and across dimensions wants to come in and make them more full and more whole and do healing, and usually it's healers or people who can do healing, they develop really bizarre and unusual symptoms that nobody can diagnose. Have you seen that there? Have they talked about that with you?
Certainly, healing is probably one of the strongest things that we do. We actually have started to case document healing. There's a place on Facebook that we use called Extraterrestrial Communicators, the Zeta Connection. On there is links to some of the stuff that we're doing. But also there's another Facebook site called Etheric Body Technologies. And on there, we're placing a lot of the articles that are written for the American Society of Standards and Mediumship. Some of the information goes into scientific journals. That is my belief, my understanding. And so we're placing articles up there that have a documentation supporting the healing. And we are very much finding that, and the Zetas have said this themselves, that there are some byproducts of contact, and they're actually able to reverse them. So there has been situations where somebody has contacted me and said, look, I've been contacted in the past. I've now moved to a state where I actually would like to, you know, interact with them a lot better, but I'm feeling physically unwell. And those people have written testimonies where after we've spoken to the Zetas, within a day or so, everything seemed to be reversed for them, that they were no longer physically unwell anymore from the contacts. I won't be giving names, anybody's names, on the show for this, but certainly there is a case study on the Etheric Body Technologies Facebook page. It's called The Role of Consciousness and the Etheric Body, and it goes through four different case studies, or three case studies, talking about different people and how they interacted with the Zetas through myself, and they received healing. So, yeah, it's been very interesting to see them, the way that they work, how they can heal skin lesions, change people's dysfunctional autoimmune systems. Look, we've had varying success with different things. One thing I always say to everybody, nobody has all the answers. Everybody has a truth, and you can only do what you can do at the time with the beings and the relationship that you have. So it's about being very grounded and balanced with it as well.
And we have our own truth and our own stories. You could say karma, but we have our own agreements and our own lessons, and we're on a continuum in those agreements and lessons. Each one of us is on a different continuum. Yours is very interesting. So the part of a primer, I know this is now going into a completely different area. But I'm just going to go there because I'm curious about it and have been for some time. I have a Zaydan that I talk to, who's told me some things, and basically we work. I don't work in the same way that you do with mediumship and the Zaydans. I do some other things involving craft and. And basically just being helpful. You know, if somebody gets lost somewhere, I go find them and get them home. But in terms of the craft, not human beings, we don't have human beings necessarily getting lost anywhere. No, don't worry, anybody. Don't worry. It's okay. But your guy, the guy that you talked to, and you, I can't remember his name, was telling you about the relationship between the reptilians and the Zeta Reticuli groups. Could you expand on that? Because my guy talks about it too, and it's really similar. But could you tell people about that? Because I think there's a lot of confusion about who is going where, what, when, and some people are seeing Zetans and reptilians and something else, and mantis beings or something else completely different. Could you talk about
the relationship
of reptilians?
Yeah, well, certainly that's been certainly one of the most interesting aspects in the beginning. I'd read a lot, I'd heard a lot of people. There was a lot of fear-based stuff around, and I remember once I was being trained for contact, and they often use what's classed as, it looks like a chair, and one of the Zetas will sit in the chair at their end, and then they'll amplify their telepathic ability and then do the mind on mind transfer, and something didn't go right, and I was able to see back through the communication to the being sitting in the chair, and it turned out to be a reptilian. And I found it really amusing. Here's this very young reptilian being taught by the Zetas how to do telepathy. He was struggling and seemed to be totally out of his depth, because I was able to actually influence his mind. So that was my first inkling that things weren't what people thought they were, like, oh, the Zetas and the reptilians are all together and they're doing all this stuff and da-da-da. So we actually asked the Zetas about this, and they said that there were obviously reptilians that that would work along with other races that weren't necessarily out there to harm everybody and to take over the universe. And we found generally, though, that there was a period of time where the Zetas and the reptilians themselves held what was called an uneasy truth. And some people might think I said truce, but I say truth. They didn't necessarily get on, and generationally, I'm sure that humans have things in their generational lines that, their history, their past, that they're not too sure about, but the Zetas have said in the past that there were problems between the races, but things have fairly much been sorted out. But we have to remember, the human species has multiple races, just as the Zeta species has multiple races and the reptilian species has lots of races. So the ones that the Zetas that I'm working with and you're working with maybe have different relationships with different different races and beings, and they're quite on quite friendly terms and working terms. Mm-hmm. I've actually met mantis entities that were very loving. And the expression of love that they had was amazing. I find generally, I work with a lot of people, I help a lot of people come to grips with their relationships, with their extraterrestrialness. And a lot of that's to do with the point of origin. Where do people come from prior to their incarnation into the physical? And what I find generally is once the people get past the whole fear aspect, there's a lot of misinformation all over the internet. Once they start to take that journey for themselves, they take those steps for themselves, and they empower themselves by understanding that they have more control than they've initially thought, those beings actually reciprocate to them on a very high level, and people generally can move past that whole fear and abduction process into an experience around the contact, contactee. But, even yesterday I was contacted by somebody about the reptilians and the Illuminati and all the rest of it. I just find that there's a certain energy with that sort of thing, and if I dwell on that, then that's what I bring to myself. So it's like me saying, look, those humans over there, I can't trust them. Well, the truth is, not all humans are like that. So I have to be, we just have to be careful about how we see other beings. That's all.
There are people, and it is very subjective. There are people who see a spider, and the spider is the most evil thing in the universe. And
yes.
I see a spider, and I say, oh, good, go get my excess insects that I don't want.
That's right. It's a bad attitude.
It's a subjective, hey, aren't you beautiful? You got yellow,
That's right.
Someone else is freaking out. I find the same thing. I had some people could say that I don't know if you and I would say that the alien abduction experience is paranormal. I think because it can run to such subtle realms,
yeah.
to the spiritual realm and the telepathic and the mind-to-mind communication. It falls within it, but then there's also that physical part.
Yeah.
And a similar experience I've had where I know somebody who, I had a near-death experience and I was absorbed in the love, and he had a near-death experience and he was terrified. And,
yeah.
you know, that's his story. And my story is,
yeah.
oh, yeah.
So different, yeah. And the thing about contact is this, is that there's so many different types. So we've got, and the Zetas say that a large percentage of people that are contacted while they're asleep. And the reason they're contacted while they're asleep is because the local consciousness has certain filtering mechanisms. And if some of them are based in fear, then it'll be a very difficult interaction between them and a human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one level. Another thing is that not all contact is based in extraterrestrial contact. So they say that as the humans have a collective consciousness, a collective will, this undulating form of consciousness is accessed by every human continually all of the time, and especially when you're asleep. Now, every experience that has ever occurred takes place and exists within the astral realms. And some people experience contact and abduction via those mechanisms of that consciousness of the human race, believing that the experience has happened to them. But in truth, it never has. We've also seen people that have had spirits with them, and the spirits have been trying to convince those people that the spirits themselves were extraterrestrials. But they weren't. And there's one reason why.
Right.
Because
right.
if you go to a medium and the medium says, I have your grandfather and this is his name and he lived here and this is the memory he has, that medium is able to validate to you in some way that your grandparent existed. Whereas, if you have an extraterrestrial contact, there is just about nothing that you can do to validate that contact. So there's some spirit people that probably don't have the best intentions realize that if they present themselves as extraterrestrials, they don't need to validate who they are. And they also pander to some people's
right.
egos. And so that's another issue that we also have to deal with.
That's a good one, because when that happens, I'm glad that you're working with that, because one of my bugaboos is getting on lists on Facebook. So, you know, they're aliens are actually demons. Well, you know, yeah, there are some in the spirit realm who will look like aliens and then not behave the way aliens actually do. And I have said to people again and again, when you're actually working with aliens, it makes sense. What they do makes sense. Why they do it makes sense.
Yep.
They have reasons. They have protocols. They have procedures. And when you get into things like negative astral entities or demons, they're confusing, and that's part of their purpose, is to be scary and frightening.
Absolutely, and because their whole belief structure is control and to draw energy. And we've come across some astral entities called the Collectors.
Yes.
And they spend a lot of their time linking into people's etheric bodies. And those people's bodies, just let me clear this up for everybody, those people's bodies, they're behavior driven. So for people that are diehard alcoholics or diehard, you know, sort of drug addicts or whatever, they are psychologically trapped in an addictive behavior pattern, and quite often they're driven to behaviors that would support an astral entity's desires. It doesn't mean that everybody has that at all, but certainly we've seen that generally that can be a common thread. It's a lot of things that to do with that sort of stuff is behavior based.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not a very popular concept to discuss either.
Right.
Yep.
Well, you know, nobody wants to say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, or yeah, I, you know, I eat too much, I drink too much, I smoke too much marijuana.
Yeah.
Or anything.
But it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it, that a lot of these substances are actually portals, and the reason that they're portals is because everything is an energy-based consciousness. So when somebody takes a certain substance like ayahuasca, DMT, or whatever, it takes them through to new borders of consciousness. And generally, you know, what's in that consciousness is contact. And it doesn't necessarily mean just because they've come down off that substance that contact has been broken either. So that was another thing that we've had to sort of deal with. The Zetas have been very good. You know, these things are very easy to clear away. You know, I just want to make that very apparent to people straight up that generally if someone can recognize that they're being influenced by something, it's just an act of the will. The free will is a very, very powerful tool, and once the intention is set that you're not going to do something anymore, then generally you're free of the processes that would try to influence you as well.
Right. And the reason, and I would like to make it clear because I'm familiar with this as well, the reason that they want to influence you is that they're usually collecting some sort of energy or information. It's
absolutely.
It's almost like food.
Yes, absolutely.
They become their food of some kind.
And that's because they can't, in the astral realm, they can't create their own energy mechanisms. So they need to link into the physical reality where matter exists to feed off that the creational energies of matter.
Right. And there's no blame or shame involved with this. You don't receive or have these connections because you are a bad person.
No. And it's not karmic,
or
it's not
God
generational.
Judged you or anything else.
No, it's just
it's like
basically
that.
It's behavior based. Change your behavior, that it stops. It's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Right. And your behavior can be your mental behavior. If you're thinking bad thoughts, change your mental behavior.
Yeah, or if you're constantly in fear. Yeah, if you know, it's interesting. I'm sure you would have, Elizabeth, have a good look around the internet at what is presented as extraterrestrial contact, you know, even by movie companies, and it's very adversarial. It's based in fear. It's always based in humans fighting for their lives and these sorts of things. It's not a situation that's positive at all.
It's telling us that we're disempowered, or that this relationship is one of disempowerment of us. And it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you went through this. I went through 7 years where I went from fear and disempowerment to, fear is the problem, and I'm not really disempowered.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, because those 7 years. It's funny because 7 years seems to be a shamanic rite, a ritual. If you do some study about shamanism and generally how a shaman is created, shamans stand between worlds. And often there's a 7-year phase that they go through before they come out the other side empowered in the fullness of their spirit guides.
You just gave me chills. Thank you for saying that. I started doing research in 1990, and I was terrified, and I stopped being abducted and doing research, you know, about abduction in 1997.
Right.
Because I wasn't getting abducted. I said, oh no, you know, I don't want to do that anymore, and we're going to change our agreement. And so 7 years, almost exactly.
Yep.
Within a few months.
So for anybody that's out there and, you know, is possibly going through a 7-year cycle, you know, there could be a propensity for that cycle to be producing certain things. See, here's another thing. If we talk about phobias, I've noticed that people that generally have had extraterrestrial contact can develop phobias, but then the phobias run their course and then either fade off into something else or just fade off completely. When we asked the Zetas about it, they said what takes place is that if you can imagine that anything that exists is energy, if an energy is going to come to you to change you, it may first show up in the psychological mind as a phobia, and then the phobia ultimately then integrates itself as an energy and then fades off as the consciousness accepts right. the energy, and then the person moves into a new state of existence. So phobias in themselves are very, very interesting processes.
Well, mine was in high school. There was a young man who died during an experience, and just looked back in his room. And when I realized that, you know, what had happened, because there was a mystery about why he had a big hole in his head, and it looked like it was cauterized, and there was no blood, and his house was locked. So when I realized that it was aliens and they could make mistakes, my phobia was of aliens taking me and making a mistake. And they did. They actually killed me once, and that's how I had my near-death experience. And then after that, I was pretty much over that phobia, because it was like, oh.
Well, there you go.
That's not so bad. So I don't know if that was engineered or if that was just a lucky break that they actually killed me and put me back together again.
Well, generally, if they're doing some sort of work on a person, there'll be other beings in the background that'll be monitoring the process. Just like a hospital, mm-hmm. anywhere has its teaching facilities. The races also have their teaching facilities as well. Some of them are aboard craft.
Yeah.
Some of them are within the hive complexes where the races exist. Those sorts of places. Yeah.
There was definitely an authority structure over the ones who were working on me, which said you need to put her back together. You know?
Well, that's helpful.
She's not supposed to be. Yeah, she's not supposed to be dead, fix her. And it was like, oh, you know, there's somebody over these guys, you know, looking at the plan. So,
well, if you think about why, yeah, but did you ever ask yourself why? You know, this is the thing, you know, why are they doing this? You know, most people, I think that's the big question for a lot of people. Why is this happening? And when we asked the Zetas, they said, well, we'll show you. And they did what was called a point of origin process with people. So they lined in a public demonstration. They got 10 people to stand up, and each person would come and stand in front of myself, who was in a trance, mind-to-mind communication state. And they would give information to that person about their point of origin before they moved into the human form. Now, each one of those people was able to verify what was told to them. Some had even drawn pictures years before of themselves in a different form.
Right.
An avian form, or a very tall blue entity form, or a Zeta form, or whatever.
Right.
And the Zetas were able to correctly
right.
see through the human container and tell them, this is who you were before you
mm-hmm.
incarnated as a human. And so quite often, the races that contact the people that are humans on this planet
okay.
are contacting their own. Now, a lot of humans don't want to hear that. Because you come from somewhere and you're
right.
going, and you're certainly going somewhere. It's just what happens in this
right.
transitory process.
Right. You have that becomes very clear as you work through it and you know, people could say, well, that's an implanted memory or this or that or the other thing, but I remember from childhood knowing that I was a tall, white
yes.
alien,
yes.
you know, and that was who I really was. And then I also had other personalities that I remembered that were also me. And it, it was explained to me that all of real time, all of conscious time happens now.
Yes.
So they're existing simultaneously as different me's, but they're all me.
Yes, of course.
They're all, and then you can expand on that, that we're all one, we're all existing simultaneously, if you want to, if you're willing to go there.
Well,
how can that be bad? I just don't think that can
be bad. That's right, I agree. And a couple of things about that is what's called the synthetic quantum environment. Now, the Zetas are very good at building these SQEs using technology. So what they do is they take an image of a timeline and they implant it into an SQE, which is a spherical structure. And in there, they then view the timeline at any point along that timeline, which is now to them. It's always now. So it doesn't matter whether it was 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years in the future, it's always now. And they can utilize that SQE, that process, to imitate any type of environment that you could possibly dream of. So they're quite often used, so something may be they might take an image of their teaching area and they place the SQE close to the planet, this planet, and then they actually get consciousness from this planet to move into the SQE and they present that as a teaching environment. A lot of people may also feel that they had been in those places before. That they had experienced that before. But one thing I did want to bring up when you said that you felt or understood that you were a tall white is that I actually asked them, I challenged them once on this in regards to myself and said, well, if I'm the who you say I am, then you bring to me someone who's not from our race, somebody who's a Zeta or a Grey from a different race, but from the abductor strain. Now, that night, I was awake and an abductor entity entered the room. And what began then, unfortunately, was a battle of wills. And I stayed conscious through the whole process. But I felt them trying to take me over. But because I knew who I was, I knew who that core person was, that higher self entity, I was able to stand my ground and to the point that I actually got a blood nose out of it. There was so much physical pressure from withstanding this consciousness. And they said, you know, is that what you wanted to see? Is that the example that you wanted? Because for them, everything is an experiment. But, you know, sometimes we also get what we ask for as well. I don't believe in any form that everybody's from spirit realm. I believe that at least 30% of the people that are walking around this planet, their consciousness exists from different realms other than spirit realm. I see a lot of people with a lot of abilities, and I see people with knowledge well beyond their years, a lot of young people, and I think to myself, things are really moving ahead quite quickly in regards to this human race.
Can you explain that a little bit more about the realms? You talk about that in the book, you know, that there are different realms. So you're saying don't believe all human beings are, you know, existing from quote-unquote spirit realm.
Yeah, of course.
Expand on that.
What do you
really mean? What realms are there and where might the other 70% be from?
Well, let's say 70% of people come from spirit realm, okay? And somebody or some race designed consciousness around this planet so that when humans became in existence and their consciousness reached the stage where they were going to transition in and out of death, that they were able to move into a holding place so they could then move back to this physical reality. And the reason I say that is because if you ask a spirit person through any medium, what did the spirit realm do with their existence prior to finding this planet? Because it seems to be that every time a spirit talks through a medium, they've come from this planet. They don't know how they contacted this planet. They don't know how they managed to even develop humans on this planet. And they don't know how they got into the spirit realm. And this is the spirit people. But thankfully, when we speak to the extraterrestrials, they say, well, of course, humans were implanted on this planet by many different races.
Okay.
that at that point there was a spirit realm or a container created for the consciousness to transition in and out of, and that of course then became the spirit realm for many of the beings that wish to move in and out of this physical container. Of course, we then have other races that also wish to experience this very lovely planet that's called Earth, and many beings move out of their own realms of consciousness into the existence through the human birthing process by asking permission of the mother and father. Now, obviously, for many people, this is a generational agreement that they have, and this is where we see generational contact take place. Now, we now have another situation, like with the Zetas, where they have no spirit realm. The Zetas move in and out of containers, so after a certain amount of time.
Immediately.
Yeah, so they live for a certain amount of time, 500 years, 1,000 years, whatever, in their containers and their bodies. And as they're getting to the point where their body is no longer functioning anymore, they take genetic material from their own form and create a new container. And then once the container is ready, they just transition straight across from one form to the next. All they're doing is bypassing two things. They're bypassing the process of forgetting about who they are, and they're also bypassing the need for a spirit realm container. But interestingly, the Zetas have created what is called the one mind. So they have the collective consciousness of the race, and many of the beings, even while they're in the physical, can move in and out from physical form to consciousness, just as humans can as well. We can also astral travel from the human form into the astral realm, into which is all the experience of this human race. The Zetas do that as well, but within their consciousness, within their realms of consciousness, they're not departed. They are existing. They see existence as being a symbiotic relationship between the physical existence and the consciousness, that they're both one and the same. So they're able to easily move in and out of being physical or being in a conscious state. And in doing so, they're able to use technology to amplify their abilities and get telepathic contact with other races. Now, of course, there are other races that are non-physical. They're interdimensional entities, such as Anorians and Trillians and all these sorts of races. And those beings, because they hold no capacity to be corporeal, they don't need any transitional process. So there are many races. There's many realms, many, many levels of consciousness.
It may just be, in my experience, when Ev asks my friend who's a Zetan, is he, why are you so interested in humanity? Why are you so interested in me as a human? And I always get a very positive response, and the positive response is something to the effect of, you are a marvelous creation who can experience things in a multitude of different ways, and that is that is precious in some way, that is precious, that is wonderful, that is beloved, that is and then you kind of have to wonder, and the egotistical me wonders, well, are we better than them? And so what would you say about this? What have you asked this question? Why are you so interested in this humanity thing, in human beings? And what have you been told?
Well, we've been told a few things. The first thing is about the singularity. Mm-hmm. The second thing is what you've been told. And then the third thing is about another subject that I'll bring up. But the first thing is that the Zetas say, listen, any ability or power that you will ever hold already exists within you. There's been nothing done to you that requires you to do anything special to activate those things. You don't need to pay $1,000 to get that done. You know, if you just sit in stillness and quiet space and connect to the universe, you know, all these abilities that you have can be activated. And, you know, you can go out there and you can help people and support, educate and experience. Another thing for them is that they use the incarnation process to experience this race. And there's a very powerful reason why. When this race, the human race, was developed, an unforeseen side effect of the human race developing, especially in the last 100 or so years, was that their technologies would start to permeate other areas of the galaxy. Also, as the humans started to experience a heightened state of awareness of their own consciousness, their ability to reach out consciously through meditative states has allowed them to contact other races. Now, these other races have said, generally, we understand through using the SQE, these synthetic quantum environment spheres, that we're able to extrapolate out what we believe will take place from the human race. The races are very interested in the human container's ability with a spirit realm consciousness as to what they can produce, as in different forms, and I must say that, a form of damage. What potential is there for the human race to take with them all of their weaponized craft into space? Or what is the potential for humans to expand all of their technologies and all of the EMF that they create into space, into other cultures? And so it's like having very rowdy neighbors. At some point in time, you have to live together. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's really putting it at the simplest possible way. That
so we're the frat house. We're the frat house with the beer cans.
Yeah, look,
out the
at this point in time, we are the frat house. You know, and we've got beer cans going everywhere, and the neighbors are looking on, going, you know, we've got to do something about this. And so the way they're doing that is there's some universal laws that are in place. You can't change anything unless you're part of it. So they can only observe externally. So, but for them to actually make any changes internally, they themselves have to incarnate into the human form, so that ultimately they're using their free will as incarnated entities to increase the consciousness of the human race.
That makes a lot more sense. That makes more sense. Have you heard anything about another Earth and another dimension? Like, for example, if we were to, you know, burn our frat house down, have you heard about a backup plan? Just curious.
There is no backup plan, and the reason is because if there was a backup plan, then 30% of the humans that are here wouldn't need to be incarnated from different races. It's very interesting that humans actually don't own this planet. We're visitors here, and we really need to respect where we live. Now, interestingly, when you ask the Zetas about how they utilize all of their resources, they actually have determined through technology what resources are available on individual planets that they live on and how much resources are available per individual Zeta being. They then allocate a resource for that day in regards to a food substance or energy, and they're able to correctly live in a relationship with a planet. They said if we did that on our planet as well, we would have a much better understanding in regards to you know, coal-fired power stations, nuclear waste, genetic modified foods, all these sorts of things. They're hoping to help this race, this human race, develop technologies that will help us understand how to utilize the resources correctly. Now, they wouldn't be doing that if there was a backup plan.
Right. That's something that I've heard as well. I mean, one of the sadnesses about the first, you know, the first set of disclosure with it not happening was that there are technologies that we could be using to basically zero out our negative impact here. I mean, that's basically how they put it, that the negative impact would go to nothing.
Yeah.
There wouldn't be a negative impact.
Elizabeth, I just need to say, I want to stop the recording now at an hour and save it. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. So I'm here with Paul Hampton from Australia, who is a spirit medium and an alien contactee, and he's been working for over six decades with alien beings, especially the Zetas. And he has written with his colleague William, how do you say William's last name?
Trinit.
Trinit?
Yes.
A primer of the Zeta race. And he is working also on a book for safe contact with alien beings. We were just talking about alien technologies and the desire for alien technology transfer to help us to be better citizens and to live on our planet without any negative effects on the planet and other beings on this planet. And, you know, I kind of want to back up. They have an ethic where the Zetas, especially in my experience, have an ethic where they're quite concerned about negative impacts on a planet. Can you tell me more about their history? And does their history have anything to do with this?
Yeah.
Or is it just...
Definitely, absolutely. Look, one obviously, nobody really knows how many of the beings exist in the physical. A lot of people think that they're interdimensional entities, but if they were, then they wouldn't really need to materialize into the physical realm to do anything. But there could be just roughly maybe 3 trillion of them, and they live across multiple different planets and on craft, of course. And that's not to say that some of them don't live in underground bases and all the rest of it. And, you know, there's also lots of other races that we haven't talked about as well. The Zetas themselves, one planet in particular, came under some sort of a contact with another race. And unfortunately, it was a reptilian race at that point. This was many, many generations ago. And the planet itself ended up being quite damaged, and the biosphere is unable to be restabilized to produce the requirement so that you can live on the surface. That was enough for them to say, you know what, we never want to see this happen again. I think it shocked a lot of the races, and it shocked a lot of the beings in the races, and it may have even caused some issues within the race that did this themselves. The Zetas actually had to defend themselves, which is something they didn't want to do. The way that they think is from a collective mind, for them to make a decision to use technologies to defend themselves was quite a drastic thing to do. They ended up defeating the reptilians at that point, and I know this sounds like science fiction, nobody can prove or disprove this, but this is what we've been told. This has led into them going, you know what, you guys, you've got a really great planet, and it's a beautiful pearl, and you really need to look after it. You need to understand the resources, and you need to understand how the planet works. And that, you know, another thing with them, they're really big on consciousness. Everything has a consciousness. You know, Gaia has a consciousness. All matter has consciousness. So they're very big on wanting to people to understand, you know, everything you do has repercussions, how you perceive yourself and others around you. So, you know, people could then step in and go, well, look, you know, if they care so much about us, how come they're abducting some of us? Well, you know, I could just about name some pretty strong countries on this planet that are doing some terrible things. And if you were an extraterrestrial standing on the outside looking in at what humans do to each other, you really can't be pointing the finger at anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I found in my own experiences that some of them are just adjustments. You know, I've been taught certain things, but then there's also this idea that, and this is even when I was getting abducted, I don't really get abducted anymore, but there are situations where adjustments are made, and I'm wondering how many, you know, if you've been shown the same thing, that sometimes these abductions are not so much abductions as they are a type of healing or a type of energetic adjustment or a type recalibration of the physical body.
Absolutely. Well,
the consciousness.
So what they say is that, you know, surrounding the physical body is what's called an etheric body, and the etheric body is the intermediary process between the higher self and the physical body. It's like a filter. Everything has to pass through either from the physical to the higher or from the higher down into the physical. And what happens is that around the temporal area, the temporal lobe area of humans are boundaries, and they're etheric boundaries, and they're ones of frequency. And generally when people try to form a connection with a race or a spirit being, whatever, they'll feel a pressure around their head or tones in their ears, those sorts of things. For them to make the adjustment, as you rightly call it, there may need to be a change in the boundary or the frequency that surrounds that process, that's etheric process around the head area. And then that allows them to have much easier access to discussion. It also gives you the ability to contact them as well. And so that's why these adjustments are necessary. I was asked for permission for mine to take place, and I allowed that to take place. Anytime they've utilized any technology with myself, I've asked to be fully conscious when it's happened, and to watch what's being done. And yes, some of it's painful, and most of it's been removed after it's been utilized as well. A lot of the communication that's placed into sinus cavities is based around them amplifying thought processes.
I just had a talk last week with Leslie Mitchell Clark, and we were talking about implants, and she was saying, well, you know, a lot of these things are like training wheels. You know, once you've learned how to utilize your, you know, your capabilities in a certain way, they're either taken out or they fall away or they, you know, disintegrate. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. In the olden days, it's funny we say olden days, but in the past, a lot of the implants were used as a technology for monitoring activity. But these days, they're not necessarily required, because as the consciousness of the race has increased, so has the etheric body frequency of each human. That allows them, because you actually hold your own signature, that allows them to actually monitor their own through their frequency. And quite often, a tone is heard by a person once they're being triangulated. You know, the phone systems triangulate through GPS. That's the same thing, and that's what a lot of the tones do in regards to that.
Yeah, I had that the last two winters. I live off the grid, and I had no electricity last winter. And I must have been being triangulated a lot, because I kept hearing a hum of, like, the refrigerator or something else. And there wasn't anything on because I didn't have any electricity. So it was that can't be happening. But it was that thing, you know, that same thing.
Yeah.
Of, all right, there's a connection now, or there's something going on now.
Another interesting thing about the technology is that different people have different types of technology. So some people may have etheric technologies to allow their healing abilities to be magnified, or other people may have technologies that are used to increase telepathy. I see a lot of it's the same as if you had a physical injury and you needed to use some biomechanical extension, you know, to create a hand or a leg or a foot or whatever. I just see these technologies from the race as in aiding us to support others. I mean, you'll generally find that most people that have moved past that contact mentality, or sorry, the abduction mentality, are working with supporting other people. They're out there, you know, offering support and education and possibly healing and a whole lot of other things. And you know, one thing I realized a while ago is that a lot of people that are in this area, they do keep to themselves generally. And the reason that we keep to ourselves is because we just like to hold our own space. Our own space gives us balance. And quite often when we allow other people into our space, we feel that, we put ourselves out there a bit. It's okay to do that, to put yourself out there, but then you always need to come back to your own space and find your own balance and be grounded as well in regards to that.
That's so true. And when we talked about that you had been working with a group of people, and I've lived, I had the luck to live, you know, off the grid, very far from people, but work with people on the phone for 7 years. And speaking of sevens, and I'm now moving back into a situation where I'll probably be working with more people one-on-one, but part of me is looking for the balance, which is living is also in the, you know, in a more wild situation, but closer to town, where I can work with people, but then leave, you know, and go to my own space. So I completely get that. Okay, one last question before I go into an end of show break. You are able to do a lot of things consciously, and it seems that you don't lose your memory. And even when you're in trance state, do you remember, well, like when you're in incorporating or having it, do you have aliens incorporate in you? Is that how you would say it?
Okay, so generally,
how would you explain it? So different people call this different things.
Yeah.
But how do you explain it?
Well, you know, there's
and do you remember it?
Okay, so you know, like, you know, imagine the ocean. You know, like you can swim on the surface, or you swim down through the depths to the very bottom of it, which, you know, and that's a lot like trance. So the way they influence your consciousness can either be very lightly or very deeply. If it's very deeply,
right,
then you probably won't remember much of what they've done, especially if they're seeking to heal somebody or scan them for medical purposes to ascertain, maybe, you know, someone's come and said, I don't feel well, can you have a look, you know, or this, you know, here's a problem, you know, can you have a look at it? So you'd be into a very deep state, because they don't want the human consciousness to be interfering with their consciousness technologies. Whereas other times,
okay,
they may come in and just want to speak, and in doing so they can just slightly influence, and you can,
right,
remember a lot of what is being said.
And it may depend on, again, how your energy and your frequency is calibrated. Do you have a good match with the technology, and so it doesn't necessarily need to feel like a change of consciousness state? Would you say that's possible?
Well, the difference is that I actually insist on the change of consciousness because of the validation.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
if I was just sitting here now talking to you and felt that some of the things that I was saying that I was being influenced to say, then I'd say that I was in a very, very light level of communication with them. But when they come,
okay,
fully, there's times when there's what's called a transfiguration process takes place, and what they do is create an etheric mask over the top of my face, and they can actually be seen,
okay,
talking over my face as well. So
right,
I end up with three fingers, and I end up with, you know, it depends on which race has come. If it's the Anunnaki, you know, then they are seen,
right,
sitting in the chair, or if it's a Palladian, you know, it's they,
yeah,
can be seen. It depends on how a lot of people have what's called spirit controls, and those spirit controls, those gatekeepers are able to physically manipulate your life force. they use those different life forces to create the ectoplasmic masks. Imagine a sheet hanging off a line, you put your hand on it and push it into the sheet, and it creates an image of your hand on the sheet hanging off the line. Well, it's the same thing with them. They can create the material so that the beings can push their consciousness into the material to present their face. And at that level, I don't want to know what's going on. I record it, but I don't want to interfere. I just, you know, I've worked with them for so many thousands of contacts that if they're there to work, if they're there to work on somebody and heal them, I don't want to interfere in that. So it's a pretty deep state.
Right. Don't
want to
You definitely. What we in the US would call trance medium, or
we're called deep trance mediums. So yeah.
Very interesting. So, have you met your spirit operator? Is this too personal question?
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, he's a pretty funny guy. I was watching Deepak Chopra on my office computer. And this spirit person came through and sat on my desk and said, "Hey, what's that?" I said, "That was Deepak Chopra." And he said, "Well, what is that?" Like, because this guy, the spirit person, was from, 100 years ago or something, and he didn't know what a computer was.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I explained that and what Deepak Chopra was, he then spent 3 days here, watching videos with me, and we would talk. And then he decided that he would give me some information about himself. And so we actually know somebody who does research into genealogy. And he went away and over 3 months came back with his birth certificate, the death certificate, the wedding certificate, all those sorts of certificates to prove the spirit control existed, which was very interesting. I'm not going to obviously give his name, and I'm not going to say, because I've seen what people do, but these spirit people, they very much exist, and there's different levels of mediumship all the way through from mental mediumship to what's called physical mediumship. And just want to mention that Donna Smith Moncrief has just written a book called Medium 9, and a lot of the work that the mediums do globally is in that book. Even some of the work that I do myself in regards to healing and extraterrestrial healings is in that book. So I found some of her work to be very good. Yeah.
Oh, well, look at that. So Donna Smith Moncrief, maybe we can get her on the show or get some people in the book on the show. This is absolutely fascinating to me. I just wanted to let people know how they can contact you if they have any questions about what we've been talking about.
Yep.
Can you give us your contact information?
Yeah, I can be contacted on paulham33@hotmail.com. And I've also got a website where we have plenty of information called paulham33.blogspot.com, and that's called the Zeta Reticulum Beings. We also have a lot of Facebook pages, so the Facebook pages are The Zeta Connection or Extraterrestrial Communicators is another one, and there's also one called Etheric Body Technologies, and that's a healing page. So there's lots of ways to be contacted, there's certainly, we try to answer every question, and what we're hoping to do is just to support people in their journey, in a loving way.
Wonderful. And we are talking with Paul Hamden, who is in Australia. He is one of the co-authors of the book, A Primer of the Zeta Race. And you're coming up with a new book. How is that going? And what's the title of the new book?
Well, there's a couple of new books. we like to give things away. So the primer book is based on a lot of scientific material. The second book is called A Primer of the Zeta Race Volume 2 because of the prolific amount of information that the Zetas provide us. But a book that I'm currently writing is called The Zeta Mind, and it's them discussing the way that their society works, the way they think. They're comparing the way that humans think to the way that they think. They're trying to bridge that gap between those different types of worlds. So I've got a few other books. One of them is the Alien Interaction Trilogy. That's available on Amazon. And I've just put a site up that teaches meditation. And I've uploaded one of my books to that as well. And the meditation site is called, it's probably got a really long name, Meditation for Beginners. But it's a blog. So there's a whole book being uploaded to that that teaches people how to meditate.
Okay, wonderful. And meditation, speak to that a little bit. I think sometimes, you know, when we do support, you and I on the Alien Abduction Support Group, sometimes people aren't familiar with it and they're kind of in the freak out stage, you know, the sort of, ah!
Yeah.
How have, and even, you know, teaching some of these skills of telepathy or, you know, physical mediumship or other kinds of intuition, I found here in the United States, at least, that there are different ways of viewing meditation, and some of them are, I don't know that I would classify what they're doing as actual meditation. You know, we're talking about, like, guided visualizations.
Yeah, no.
How do you, in your book, the meditation that you talk about is, how would you classify that, and how did you find it important?
Well,
in your process?
The book goes through different stages about meditation, because the book's called Spiritual Guides, Mediums and Dimensional Entities. And the reason that I wrote the book was because I just wanted a simple guide in regards to, you know, getting into some sort of state of consciousness. Many people struggle with their minds. Their minds are there presenting themselves with all the problems of the day. And, you know, so, you know, obviously there are guided meditations that people use to sort of divert their minds. But ultimately their mind is always there, and it's not something that can be avoided. So it's best to teach the mind how to focus on the breath. The Zetas have shown us that the breath contains infinite gateways to consciousness, and breathing allows the energetic structures of the body to change frequency, such as the brain going into the theta state. In these states of consciousness, in these states of clarity and stillness, the guides, spirit people and extraterrestrials can come through and offer support and comfort and education and experience. And so for a lot of people, rather than continually reacting to their external stimulus that they're being provided either by the planet or the people around them or extraterrestrials or spirit, meditation allows people to take control of the what's going on around them by being in a space of stillness and allowing people to become observers and observers of their own behavior. Using the breathing techniques allows the people to also move into these clear states of understanding. And that's what many of the races seek. They seek people that can be utilized correctly in a place of stillness. And so that's why when someone comes to me and says, oh, I've been abducted, or I've got contact, or whatever, how do I improve this situation or change the situation? The first thing I focus on is, do you meditate? Do you know how to breathe? Just things like that, simple things, things that exist already within our capacity.
That makes a lot of sense, and I think to me it clarifies, and I would hope that people would take this to heart. There are, you know, there's meditation and then there are practices, and sometimes the practices are not the same thing. There isn't stillness, there isn't quietness of the mind.
Yeah.
There's, you know,
a lot of people
attempt to program regardless of that, but the mind is still going.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Well, a lot of. I was lucky. I didn't know anybody when I I shouldn't say that. I didn't know anybody when I was going through this. The only ones I knew were the beings themselves. So they taught me, look, if you want better contact, then make yourself a clearer conduit. You know, the things they said were quite simple to understand. I think sometimes, you know, complexity masks other things that I don't understand. So maybe it's best just to sit down, be simple, be quiet, and spend 10 minutes a day meditating quietly, just listening to your breath, understanding that when you breathe a certain way, that it changes the energy around you, that it produces different types of contact. And when you understand your own breath and you understand your own energy, then you can understand when somebody comes to you of a different energy. Once you understand that, you can see that there's difference. When you see the difference, you know that you have some level of contact.
Right. An interaction that is real in a different way. You know, there we have multi-level interactions on a daily basis, from, you know, the most superficial, physical, to really noticing. One thing that I don't know if it was just me or if it was the alien connection, but even as a child, I always was being sent out in the woods to really notice.
Yeah.
Really notice the trees, notice the leaves, notice the light, notice the wind, notice the bugs, notice the grass.
And they were building capacity for you to understand the difference.
Right. To notice something that... And then one thing I think happens in our modern society is that we don't notice what's outside of us, and we're trying very hard not to notice what's inside of us, because, you know,
That's true. We're reactive. That's very true.
But maybe the aliens would have something to say about that. All right, let's look at our time. I just want to say I'm so happy to be talking with Paul Hamden from Australia, a very talented medium and alien contactee, who you do group sessions with Zetas, and you do group healings, is that correct? Or do you do one-on-one healings there?
So we do one-on-one healings. So if somebody, you know, look, nobody can ever say that they can heal. So what we do is we say, there will be some energy work that takes place, and what we would hope that you would have some medical documentation to support the current situation that you're in. And then after the energy work, we would like for you to go back to the doctors and see if there has been any changes. And so we have now been developing case studies which support the healings that the Zetas have given. So yes, there are individual energy work that takes place. We do group sittings with people where we teach them meditation and trance work so that they can contact spirits or themselves or extraterrestrials. And sometimes we do group sessions where we vector in craft. The vectoring in of craft is unfortunately something that I don't do very often, and there's only one good reason. It's because I've been asked to take responsibility for anything that happens to the craft when it comes here. So if I'm, and it's not a craft that you see, you know, hundreds of kilometres away in the sky. If the craft lands on the ground, I've been asked to take responsibility, and I've said, well, I can't, because I don't have that level of control over human society, and so we actually don't do it that often.
And that makes some sense. I'd love to talk to you more about that. I'm just going to check our time. Check it. We have a few more minutes. You've seen craft before. You told me, you know, that you've seen craft before. People are always interested in what they look like. Can you describe some of the types of craft that you've seen?
Absolutely, would love to. That's one of my favourite subjects. So the first craft that I saw looked like a cigar, but had no windows, and I was with other people, and it was up close, about 40 meters away. The side of the craft went clear, and two Zeta beings were standing there watching us while we stood there watching them. After a few minutes, it just sort of disappeared. So that was all about how they dematerialized their craft. Now, a lot of that's in the book. A lot of this is in the primer of the Zeta Race book about the dematerialization, consciousness, craft, or technologies, those sorts of things. The second craft that I've seen was amazing. It was near the sun. It looked like a manta ray, if you've ever seen one of those big manta rays. And they was actually using the sun as a method for powering itself up. Another one, of course, I wasn't near the sun when that happened, by the way, I'm just to make that clear. Sometimes I get taken to craft and I'm able to see what's inside them. Okay. And other times I'd see them, you know, from a remote viewing process that is supported by the Zetas. Other craft, when they've come and physically landed, one was like a classic dome, but underneath it had some two coloured lights on it, and there were 20 people sitting in a circle. The craft landed outside of the circle. Most people had their eyes closed because it was a very difficult situation for most people to even comprehend that a craft had landed. The craft was in a semi-dematerialized state, so you could see it, but it looked very watery. These watery-looking entities, now I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Contact with Jodie Foster, but at the end of it, this watery-looking entity comes up towards her as she's standing in the sphere.
Yes.
Exactly the same process. These watery-looking entities come up, but as they were walking on the ground was crunching under their feet, and you could hear them walking, everybody could. They stood around behind that one being behind every person. They stayed there for about 15 seconds, moved back over to the craft. The craft took off, and then the clouds that were in the sky above our heads all rolled backwards. And all the dogs and all the animals stopped howling. It was a very interesting encounter, something I'll never forget. So, yeah, there's lots of different craft and different technologies and how they use their craft and how they build their craft. That's really interesting as well. So the Zetas have talked all about that, using genetic technologies, how they build certain human containers to use as well for different functions, but they say they specifically do not splice their genetic material with human material because the nucleotide sequence of humans is different to the Zeta race. But you know, there's just so much information, and it's all really interesting.
And a lot of this is in the
book. It's in the books, yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's in the books. Wonderful. So people can find that in A Primer of the Zeta Race with by Paul Hamden and William
Treneat.
Yep. And it's available as a free download. Just put it into your browser, in your Google or Yahoo, and download A Primer of the Zeta Race, and you will get your copy downloaded immediately.
Yeah.
There's a new version coming out, or if you want a paperback, you can go on Amazon and grab a paperback copy.
A lot of people do grab the paperback
and
as well, because they like something to carry around.
It's nice to feel paper and have it to look at. That's a book I just wrote. I really like the paperback version a lot better.
There you go.
It was like, there's something different about this.
Yeah.
But it depends. Okay, so let's see. If there was one thing that you could tell someone who is, let's say midway through their 7 years, or they've come to a state of awareness or consciousness about being a contactee or an abductee or having a generational connection, one or two things, what would you tell them that you think might help them?
You've come from somewhere, you're here for the experience, and you're going somewhere. To meditate and to find the stillness, to not allow the local consciousness to filter out and create and catastrophize things, to listen to your breath work, and to seek out, you know, really strong loving energies that are seeking to support you. Because in the end, we all come and go from this place. This is just some sort of holographic environment, and you're here for the experience. You may as well enjoy it and make the most of it.
Good deal. Good advice. Paul, thank you so much for talking with me tonight, and I really look forward to hopefully talking with you again in the future. And when, if you get a chance to come to the United States, please let us know.
I will, Elizabeth. Yes, of course. It was lovely talking to you as well.
Thank you so much. We are on Spaced Out Radio Network. This is the show Cosmic Passport. My name is Elizabeth Anglin. If you would like to contact me, you can find me at elizabethanglin.com. If you would like to look at the other offerings on Spaced Out Radio Network, go to spacedoutradionetwork.com. There are other experiencers and people working in different ways with the spirit world, physical world, who often are on Spaced Out Radio Network, just trying to understand and come, you know, learn and experience more and more about our shared physical and energetic reality. And again, we thank Paul Hamden so much for telling us about his experiences and his path. Thank you again. And for all of you listening, I hope you take this forward and do great things with it, and that it's healing and helpful to you at the same time.
Yes, absolutely.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.